wrestling fans, and welcome to another edition. I'm John Arezzi.
How you doing, everybody? John Arezzi here. On August 9th, 2024, we haven't done a live broadcast in a very long time. I am here to talk about Kevin Sullivan. Kevin Sullivan passed away early this morning. I had gotten a text, I think it was about 4:30 this morning, from Andrew Anderson, who is one of Kevin's dear friends, who informed me at, I'll get the text out here, passed away at 5:25 a.m. Got the message at 5:26. I had been talking to Andrew the last couple of days about bringing him on to do a tribute to Kevin. I had gotten the word 2 days ago that Kevin was taken off life support and that his passing was imminent. And at that time, I decided that I needed to do a tribute to my friend of 50 years. Here we are. So I've invited Don Leibel to join us. Donnie will be joining us. Donnie's known Kevin for just as long. We have clips of Kevin, of some of our past shows that we did with him. Kevin is somebody that befriended me, really the first one of the boys who befriended me in 1975. I was a young teenage reporter. I had met Kevin, who was doing work in the WWWF. I was going to college in Boston. Kevin was from New England, and met him at Madison Square Garden. We struck up a conversation, a relationship. And for 50 years, he was my friend. We did a lot together. Kevin did a lot of my shows. He went overseas to Southeast Asia with me. And I worked very closely with Kevin and Nancy, his wife, woman. Kevin appeared on my radio show so many times. I took hundreds of pictures of him, interviewed him so many times. He did all my, most of every one of my conventions. He worked with me on other shows I produced, and I am so devastated and sad right now. When I found out, what happened to him, the GoFundMe was set up and everyone contributed, and I was hoping he was in rehab. I was hoping that, he would be in rehab and then come back home and go back out on the circuit, because I know he loved doing these conventions. The last time I saw Kevin live was in at the Cauliflower Alley reunion in 2019. It had been a long time. We reacquainted. We got his new phone numbers. We had a lot of conversations up till not too long ago. And I love the man. And I can't tell you how much I love Kevin Sullivan and how close of a friendship I had with him, what a mentor he was to me. So today we're going to pay tribute to him. It's going to be hard to do it, but we're going to make the best of it, and we're going to relive some great memories about Kevin Sullivan. I want to bring on Marsh And Marsh has been working very hard this morning and early afternoon to pull clips. Marsh, thank you for all the work, first and foremost, for getting everything together for this kind of impromptu appearance. We were going to tape a broadcast for my Pro Wrestling Spotlight Rewind podcast, but I said, let's go live. And I'm happy that we were able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. I mean, yeah, I knew we were going to have to do something for him. And I mean, I have to thank you first and foremost for taking me out to the Cauliflower Alley Club a couple years ago when you did, because that was the last time I got to see him in person. And it was, I got to talk to him for a little while, and he even approached me at one point, and I don't even think he realized at the time that I was working with you. And I just got to shoot the shit with him for a little bit. And I remember thinking just how incredibly cool that was, because he was also, and I told him this, I know everyone in the Attitude Era talks about NWO, the Nitro Wars and all that. But for me during that era, the Taskmaster was absolutely my can't miss. If he was on TV, I was watching it, because I was also young at that age. That was my first really impression of him. I didn't know about all the other great stuff he had done.
Yeah.
I mean, he captivated me. So,
yeah.
So thank you for allowing me the chance to get to meet him a couple of times.
He's such a great guy, and what a creative genius he was. And we're getting a lot of comments coming in, so please keep them coming. I see Dave Drayson, Dave Brzezinski, who's commented, and other people here who were sharing their memories as well. So yeah, Marsh, we're going to have a good show to tribute our friend today, and we've got some cool clips to play and some interviews and audio and video. And but let's bring Donnie Liable on, because Donnie, there he is. Hey, Don.
Hey, guys.
Thank you, first and foremost, for joining us here today, because you knew Kevin about just as long as I did, 50 years.
Yeah, you know, it's a pleasure for me to talk about people that I grew up with in wrestling, people that you get to know later in life, aside from the public side of them. And I mean, for me, being here in Florida, Kevin Sullivan, back particularly in the early 80s, working out of the Tampa office with Eddie Graham and Dusty Rhodes, boy, he was a huge star down here working in Southwest Florida, all the way down to Miami. But my first time I met Kevin Sullivan was maybe 76, 77. When I would go to, back then, the WWF would run shows in armories. It was very personal, whether it was in Albany, New York, or places like Holyoke and Chicopee in the Springfield area. And I would go to the arenas there, and then the boys would hang around by the dressing room door area, and people were getting autographs and all. And I was trying to get an interview with Kevin Sullivan, and in Holyoke, one day he did. And I told him, I said, I'd like to do a story for Ring Magazine. He didn't know me from anybody, and I had my little tape recorder with me, and he let me talk to him. And ironically, one of the referees there, by the name of Fred Sparta, was asking me what I was doing there, because again, this was in the mid 70s when things were so much more closed. And when he saw me hanging around there, Kevin had walked away. I had made the mistake by saying to him, "Hey, I'm no kayfabe," and that threw him in a tizzy. He wanted to know why I said that, and I got scared. And for the rest of the show, I was behind the bleachers, because I was waiting to go back with somebody, and I was afraid that the wrestling group was coming to get me, because I said, I'm no kayfabe, you know? but at least I got my interview with Kevin that day.
How old were you, Don, at that time?
I was 16 or 17.
Hey, I'm no kayfabe at 16.
And that was pretty big back then, you know? I mean, after you mentioned Dave Drace and Brzezinski there, I mean, you know, when we all met back in 75 or so at the convention in Boston, that changed me forever. But then I remember, you know, we see people as they age. I mean, we remember Kevin when he was a very young man. And over the years that you progress, as we all do, we change in appearance and all. And I always, my lasting view of Kevin will be the pictures that you took of him, where he used to wear the red, white, and blue trunks. Yes. And he looked just looked like just a regular farm boy kind of tough guy. And my two lasting memories, one when you had the Sheik at one of your conventions and Kevin was talking with him, and the Sheik was not even talking to anybody else, but, you know, that was something to be around the two of them. But clearly, when you had your show in Dallas, and I've talked to you so many times about this, how great this was. You had Sherry Martel, Kevin, and Woman there, Jake Roberts, Diamond Dallas Page, and right before the show, whatever, they wanted to cancel the show, the local promoters, from ticket sales or whatever not being what they wanted. And you and Kevin went to speak with these people and took a no to the show went on. And afterwards, that night, you and I and Kevin and Nancy were walking the streets in Dallas. We found a Miami sub shop. We sat in there, but the whole idea was, wow, here we are years, you know, maybe 20 years after I met Kevin for the first time. Now we're sitting in the restaurant, just the four of us talking. Those are memories that they just stay with you. You're so glad to have.
Yeah. Yeah. Kevin was so instrumental with that show in Dallas and just so many other things, other memories with Kevin. Did we, after a Boston show, did we go out with him? That was not him. That was Missy Hyatt and Eddie.
Missy, Eddie, and Paulie.
Okay.
Yeah, we all piled in the cab.
Quality time with Kevin. And Kevin, you were talking about the Sheik and my convention in 93, my last convention, and I wanted to do something special, so I threw out the idea to Kevin. I was like, what do you think about the Sheik? Do you think he'd do one of these autograph things? And, oh, I don't know, John, you know, the Boston accent. I'll call him up. And then Kevin called me back. He said, he'll do it. And Kevin facilitated the booking. Kevin also facilitated the booking for me and Ric Flair in 91. He got Flair, vouched for me, and Rick knew me from, you know, he threw me out of the dressing room in Philadelphia because I was back there trying to get some interviews. But Kevin facilitated that. Kevin did a lot for me. Kevin was somebody that was a confidant, a mentor, and just a dear friend. I mean, we talked baseball just as much as we talked wrestling when we were together.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because same with me. Some shows I would go to the Boston area that Tony Rumble would promote, and Kevin was on most of the shows. And I could remember getting to the shows early, getting in a dressing room, and just talking baseball with Kevin. And he'd have that Boston accent about, you know, I don't tell you about the Yankees and those Mets. And well, one day I gave him my Ted Williams autograph. It was on a Hall of Fame plaque card. And you would have thought I gave him a payday. He was so thankful for that. But I said, you'd enjoy this more than I would holding on to this. And boy, I know I made his day for that. It was a special time.
He loved his Red Sox. You know, my fondest memories of just hanging out with him and Nancy, and just even overseas when we went to Singapore and Philippine Islands, and just being able to just spend so much time with them. When I was looking to book Nancy at I think one of my first autograph signings for Pro Wrestling Spotlight, it was after my first convention, and I asked Kevin, is it okay if I book Nancy? And he was like, yeah, you know, and we cut a deal, and he trusted me with her to make sure that she was taken care of. So we went back and forth, and there's multiple appearances on Pro Wrestling Spotlight over the years, dating back to when I did the show in college in 75, 76, wow. Kevin used to come on that show at that time, and he was a young guy. So we hit it off, and we remained friends. And granted, when I left the wrestling business, you know, you lose touch with people. But once I got back in 2019, and then when I saw Kevin at the Cauliflower Hour convention, it was like no time had passed.
Isn't it great? Yeah.
But it's just a sad day today. And we got a lot of people watching this, which is great. And everybody on here, we got a lot of comments coming in. And so we'll try to get to some of those and read those intermittently as we're doing this broadcast. But Marsh, why don't you kind of, you know, we're going to go on a little bit of a journey and we'll comment after each one of these little clips and videos and audio pieces. So, Marsh, tell us what we have today. I know we have a combination of a lot of different things to share with everybody.
It's a couple different eras and stuff. And like you said, he was on your show in the 70s, so it really wasn't that big of a leap to expect that when you brought Pro Wrestling Spotlight to the radio, that he would be on your flagship show, your debut.
April 9th, 1989.
Yeah. And it's just also kind of cool. And it's one of those things I've appreciated about the more I've learned about your relationship with him is he was oftentimes one of your first calls anyways. You're doing something in wrestling, I got to give Kevin a call.
Yeah.
And he never turned you down, you know? Yeah. So we have this one. This is just, there's not a lot to it. It's not super deep. He was just putting over his program that he had going on and you were setting
with
it up.
With the NWA at the time.
With the NWA and... this is just his first appearance on there. And I like your setup on this one too, because this is when they started the program with Teddy Long that brought him into being a manager.
And this is pure kayfabe too.
Pure kayfabe.
First one, the World Tag Team Championship changed hands last week. There's a referee that is now working in the NWA by the name of Teddy Long. And he is, I think he's cracking up to tell you the truth, because some of the decisions he made and has been making recently do not make any sense. He gave the Road Warriors the fastest count in the world last Sunday as they lost the tag team titles to Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Mike Rotundo of the Varsity Club. Now, what happened last night in New Haven, I got to speak to all the participants in this big title change. And what we did is we spoke, first of all, to the captain of the Varsity Club, Kevin Sullivan, and what he had to say was that it was not luck. It was just a matter of skill that the Varsity Club defeated the Road Warriors, the most feared tag team in professional wrestling. So right now what we're going to do, we're going to get the comments, first of all, from Kevin Sullivan, the captain of the Varsity Club. For the Pro Wrestling Spotlight here with the captain of the Varsity Club, Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, you guys had some luck last week. You got the World Tag Team Championship.
There was no luck to it. There's no luck to it. 1, 2, 3. Maybe a little controversy because the first time anybody's ever seen
a lot of controversy.
A little. You know, everybody has a different opinion. And what it was the people were shocked because the Road Warriors got beat for the first time on a 1, 2, 3. It happens to everybody. It happened to Muhammad Ali. He met his Joe Frazier. It happened to the Road Warriors. They met their Varsity Club.
Yeah, but the Road Warriors now are livid. What's the next step here? Obviously, rematch?
More livid. That's what's the next step. Is. Anytime they want a rematch, the same outcome is going to happen. The Road Warriors don't have a chance against the Varsity Club. It's that simple.
And listen to that. You just keep continuing on with Steiner. When are you going to end it?
I'm going to end it pretty soon because I have a plan for Rick Steiner. And believe me, the plan I have will absolutely shock the wrestling world because I am the evil genius of the wrestling business.
The Taskmaster, the evil genius. Memories of Kevin Don from that era in 1989?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I haven't thought about the Varsity Club in for a long time. What a wonderful tag team. These guys were believable. They were believable because they were muscle. They kept to the mat and it was a good style of wrestling that you could follow very easily because not a lot of high spots. And it's wonderful you have someone like Kevin Sullivan, the access you had where it was still, you know, you're treating it kayfabe, and I don't know. I get very nostalgic over things like that, and for him to talk to you like that, brings me back to a good time of wrestling.
Yeah, it certainly was. It was, and Kevin was. You know, I was just getting back in the business, and basically, Kevin, you know, navigated my way through the backstage and, you know, introduced me around a little bit when I started the radio show. So he was always very helpful, even when I got back in and always opened doors for me. He really did.
So I had a question for both of you guys, too, because there's been so many iterations of Kevin Sullivan. And this was obviously the Varsity Club. And I'd mentioned before my favorite iteration was Taskmaster because it's what I learned him on. What was your guys' favorite era of Sullivan?
Well, for me, it was clearly the mid-70s WWWF. There was nothing flashy about him. He was pretty much in the opening matches, small in stature, but he always looked thick. His body was in good shape. And when he went out to the ring for that era, he gave you a good pro wrestling match where, you know, people gave their effort. It looked like maybe he has a chance to win. He went down, he got up right away. You know, because he started in the Boston arena with the Santos Wrestling School. And, you know, he learned from a lot of veterans there. And it wasn't all flash. So when he came up, he was finding his way. But clearly seeing him at Madison Square Garden and Nassau Coliseum back in the mid-70s, that was my favorite era.
I really liked the chance that we had, and we're going to talk more about it, but Sullivan came on our last iteration of this show. And before he did, John sent me a ton of pictures that he'd taken of him like backstage at Madison Square Garden. And he had like dark brown hair. He wasn't what I saw him all at all, you know?
Yeah. I remember back in those early days, like you were mentioning, I mean, he was thick, you know, he had those big thighs and just was. You know, and he was tough and he won a good portion of his matches. So he was always somebody that was kind of B level. He wasn't going to that A level, but he traveled around territories and he just made a name for himself. And then, you know, with his creative mind, the booking then evolved. My favorite era, Kevin, I think I liked every one of them. I really do. I didn't see a lot of the stuff he did down in Florida with Fallen Angel and that whole faction that he put
Mark
down.
Lewin and yeah.
And King Curtis, all of those guys.
Yeah.
So I didn't see a lot of that. I was kind of out of the business at that time. But I loved the Varsity Club. I even loved when he was working with Mick Foley. It's Cactus Jack as kind of the mentor. Yeah. And he'd be slapping Cactus around. And, you know, and they developed such a strong friendship as well. So everything Kevin did was amazing. One memory I have, and I was so happy for him, that Shea Stadium show, the very first one that they did, Kevin actually had a match against Jose Gonzalez. I think it was the opening match. I was able to put photos of him there. But all of those eras were great. And just once again, being able to work with him, being able to kind of book matches with him on the tours that we did, and what a leader he was, and always thinking, always coming up with an angle or an idea. And then his days with, you know, the ECW, you know, when he was at ECW as well. And then Dancy became so prominent there with Sandman. And it was like every era was a great era with Kevin. And Kevin always, I mean, and this is, and when I got back into the business in 19 and I met him at CAC and we had our first conversation, he was like, John, get that IWAS started again. I got a lot of people over there in Southeast Asia we can do stuff with. And he was serious about it. And I was like, Kevin, I'm out of the promoting business, man. He goes, we'll clean up, brother. We'll clean up, brother. So, you know, it's like every memory I have of Kevin, there's not a bad one. And even I got a really funny one, and it may be a little off the wall, but I'm going to share it. When I was doing the Southeast Asia stuff, and Kevin stayed by my house on Long Island for a couple of days because we were either planning some booking for IWAS or whatever we were doing. And my mom was like, you know, my mom, Snooki, you know, you remember my mother, you know how she was. She was a little paranoid about everyone. And, you know, when she first met Mick Foley, Cactus Jack, she was like, I'm so afraid of him. And he was the gentlest guy to her. Yeah. Kevin stayed over. And I guess in the middle of the night, I guess Kevin woke up and went to use the bathroom. And my mom used to be she'd be up almost all hours of the night smoking a cigarette. And then he came out of the guest bedroom and he walked in and he scared the shit out of her. But it was just so funny. He started laughing and she started laughing. But those are just some of the memories, man.
John, you know, I was just thinking of where Kevin excelled in the States too. was in the promotion based out of Knoxville, the Continental Wrestling. I remember him there with Ronnie Garvin and Boris Malenkov and Ron Fuller.
When were we at that convention? Were you at that convention when they had that chain match and Kevin was on the card?
Yes.
I took a bunch of pictures, and I think I sent Marsh a couple of those.
1978, and we were at Chilhowie Park in Tennessee, Chilhowie Park.
Yeah, and he was on that show. And
it was a Sunday, and it was a chain match, yeah. I mean, he reinvented himself everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah, he did. Because he was kind of clean cut there, even, you know, and his different eras, and even the way he's, like you said, reinvent himself. Different look, different gimmick, but always so freaking creative. Always so creative. Marsh, what do we got next?
I got a question for you, and we got a couple things about it, because, I mean, I've got a few things from the IWAS tour, because I just was so fascinated by it.
Yeah.
There's actually a question in there that kind of ties into it, too, in our chat by Dennis Langhank. He says that it's ironic that he was often billed from Singapore and then went there wrestling with you guys. What was he built from when you were there? And we did the watch along in episode 84 when Kevin came on of his match out there with Sonny Beach. And he was built from Singapore. And I remember I laughed because I was like, hometown hero.
Yes.
Do you remember the origin of why he built himself from Singapore so much? Because we also know, just real quick, that wasn't his first time there. Asked him that flat out, and he said he'd gone a bunch of times. But go ahead.
He had a love for Southeast Asia, and he went there several times. Maybe he was with, because, you know, even guys like Mark Lewin and Curtis IUK or King Curtis, he had, like, you know, he went on a lot of tours there, and I think he visited there too. He just loved the area. He just loved that part of the world.
It was always interesting that someone built from Singapore had such a Boston accent.
Yeah, he went to New Zealand and Australia often, and that's why he was billed from, I guess. He was almost like an Abdullah the Butcher at times as well. Mm-hmm. When I say that, I mean with, you know, brawling and blood and whatnot. I think Kevin knew that, you know, he had some limitations, particularly his size and a business that was always looking for monsters. Yeah. So he always had to, reinvent themselves, like say, when he had women and a couple of other girls down here in Florida. He had a fair amount of press on that, which was really good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's play a clip of, it's a series of promos back to back to back. It's about 3 minutes long, so there's not a ton of them, but it was getting ready for your IWAS tour. And, it was just really kind of cool to see how much he was willing to put in. He didn't half-ass anything.
Yeah.
I'm Kevin Sullivan. I'm with the hottest wrestling group of all times, International Wrestling All-Stars, and I'm coming to your hometown. You better be there, because if you're not, I'm going to walk down your house, kick down your door, snatch you off the couch, and bring you down there anyway. Okay. Same thing? Okay. I'm Kevin Sullivan, and this is none other than the Fallen Angel, and we're coming to your town, International All-Stars, the hottest ticket this summer. Be there.
In a few, he starts going towards Jake, too. Where did you guys film this?
Okay. We filmed it down in Tampa. Okay.
I'm Kevin Sullivan, and this is the Fallen Angel, and the hottest ticket this summer is International Wrestling All-Stars. Be there. It's coming to your town. You know, the Fallen Angel is going to accompany me, Kevin Sullivan, to the hottest ticket in the world today, International Wrestling All-Stars, and they're coming to your town. Be there. The two baddest apples in the whole world are Terry Funk and Kevin Sullivan. Well, I'm Kevin Sullivan, and this is the Fallen Angel. You see, Terry Funk, if I lose to you, I'll even give it to you. I ain't going to lose ever to you, Terry Funk. Terry Funk, no company could sign this match. No federation. It took the International Wrestling All-Stars to sign it. You and me, brother. One time only. I'm so confident that I can win, I'll give you the Fallen Angel for a week if I don't.
Insane.
You see, the International All-Stars...
Stop me again.
The International Wrestling All-Stars think they're going to throw a guy named Johnny Rotten? You think a little punk like Johnny Rotten's going to stop me? Me, the man that is so vicious, his whole family moved and never sent him a postcard? Johnny Rotten, I eat guys like you for breakfast. You see, the International Wrestling Stars think they must be President Clinton. Fair trade. They're going to deal with Mexicans. The number one Mexican champion of the world, Conan. Well, Conan, you're going to meet the buck stops here, Sullivan, because once I get through with you, you're going back over the Rio Grande in a pine box. Fair trade or no fair trade? Conan, the Fallen Angel has told me, accept the challenge for the IWA Junior Heavyweight title. You see, Conan, we have a plan for you. You see, they're going to have fair trade in Mexico, and the fair trade is I'm going to take your belt and send you back there with 2 pesos.
Very cool. Yeah, he worked Conan. Conan loved it. Conan and Kevin hit it off, I mean, immediately, and what a friendship developed there. And we had Kevin in a wide variety of different matches. You know, we're in Singapore and in the Philippines. And in the Philippines, we did 7 days in a row in the same venue. And some of them were matinees and an evening show. So we had to be really creative in the booking. So everybody got to work with everybody else. You know, so it was really, really cool. And, you know, all of that IWS tour, that footage with Kevin and everybody else on that tour, it was loaded. And Kevin was, you know, kind of my right hand on that entire run. It was amazing.
John, do you know have any idea of where his services will be and when?
I do not. I reached out to Andrew because Andrew, we wanted him to come on the show today. And after Kevin, you know, we were going to put him on the tribute show that we were taping for release. But when Kevin got the text that Kevin passed, I haven't heard from Andrew. I texted him once, tried to call him, but Andrew would certainly know. I think George Napolitano will probably know. I'm sure it'll be public, but it probably will be. I don't know if it'd be down in Florida because I know he lived in Washington as well. But he lived in Florida for so many years, and I believe that's where his family is. So we'll, you know, if we have that news, we'll let everybody know. But at this point, Don, I don't know.
Yeah, he was living just in a little island off Seattle. Remember he was talking about that when he was on.
Yeah, when I had one of the calls with him, he was talking about it. And he was like, John, I'm surrounded. I got a lot of military people right there. I'm safe. I'm protected. So I was like, you know, sometimes I couldn't decipher what he was saying, you know. Because Kevin, like, you know, some of us would like to partake a little bit in the, you know, in the wacky tobacco, you know. but yeah, that was some crazy couple of calls I had with him. But I still can't believe it. I just can't fucking believe it. I can't.
When I got my tickets to go to CAC this year, I immediately started looking up all the Kevin Sullivan stuff I had lying around because I was like, excited to see him again. I was like, can't wait to see him, especially because now I've talked to him a couple times. We did the show with you. And so I was like, I might get a chance to actually talk to him a bit more and maybe, you know, but
yeah,
it's a hit.
Now, from what I understand, I mean, I don't know all the details, you know, about what happened. I think it was at a convention. They said he had do you know anything deeper as far as, you know, how this happened and, because I know it happened at a wrestling convention. He fell or something happened. He hurt his leg and he developed an infection. And
yeah, I just remember that it was that he had collapsed and I didn't think much of it. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And then, you know, with so many people supporting the GoFundMe and for his rehab and the medical bills. And then it was just kind of like I was on the phone with Mitch Steinfeld you know, the other day, and he was like, you know, Kevin was taken off life support. And I was like, what do you mean? You know, I thought he was on the road to recovery. And Mitch was a young promoter out of New York. And he goes, yeah, George called me, Napolitano, and said, would you come, you know, Kevin is off life support. And he's going to pass. And would you come with me to the service? So I haven't talked to George. It's just, this is a shock, man. It really is.
No.
Before we go into the next clip, I have something that's kind of, you look back at it now and, you know, it's sad and everything, but there was a rumor back in 1992, Don, and I don't know if you remember this or not, that there was a rumor that Kevin had been murdered. It was in February.
I didn't hear that.
It was in February 1992. And at that time, I had Pro Wrestling Spotlight newsletter that I was doing. And this is the March 9th, 1992 edition of it. And I'm going to read it so everyone can kind of get an idea. And this is, you know, it's hilarious in a lot of ways. So here's the actual article that I wrote. And it is entitled, You Can't Kill the Devil or the Death of Kevin Sullivan. So I'll read it, and it was crazy now that you look back at it. It goes like this. Kevin Sullivan is one of my closest friends in the wrestling business. I've known Kevin since 1975 when he was just breaking in. So when I heard about Kevin's death, it stunned me. My phone rang at 1 p.m. on February 17th. Carmine Despirito, editor of the Wrestling Eye magazine, a.k.a. the creator, a.k.a. UB Marks, asked if I heard anything about Kevin Sullivan. No, I didn't, I replied. He's dead, said Carmine. Died of an overdose. My heart went into my mouth. I immediately hung up and tried to confirm the story. I first tried Kevin's number. His machine picked up. It was an eerie feeling listening to the voice when he might not be with us any longer. I left a meek message asking someone to please call me regarding something I heard about Kevin. And then I hung up. Calls were placed to George Napolitano, other wrestlers, promoters, and reporters. No one knew anything. Finally, at 5 p.m. that day, I spoke to Kip Fry, who at that time was leading WCW, who informed me that he spoke to Kevin earlier in the day. And I just let out a sigh of relief. My feelings then turned to anger. Who started this rumor and why? That night, I must have received 25 calls, all telling me Kevin Sullivan was dead. And there must have been a dozen different causes of his death, from our drowning to being shot to the drug OD. The stories were getting more fantastic as they were coming in. I was really angry about all of this, but getting more curious about Kevin and Nancy and what was going on and how they were reacting. The following day, I got a call from Nancy. She said that it was a madhouse at their place for the past 2 days. They literally got over 100 calls about Kevin's death. I asked her to have Kevin call me later that evening. My phone rang. This is a dead man calling. I picked up and spoke to my dear departed friend, Kevin. And what follows is Kevin's description of the events surrounding his death. I'm not going to read it in Kevin's voice, but this is what Kevin said in the interview that I did on the phone with him that I aired on Pro Wrestling Spotlight. John, all this started on Friday. I got a call from Janie at the WCW office. She said she heard that I died in a car wreck. I assured her I was okay, and that was the end of it. On Sunday, Nancy and I went to get Hump, Oliver Humperdinck, to go to the Ed Gertner Memorial Service. In the car, Hump told me he got a call from a girl he knows in Charlotte, North Carolina, who said I was shot in a bar. This was even stranger. We stayed away from home on Sunday, and Monday we get home at 5:30, and in our parking lot is the chief of police, who's a good friend of mine. He was ready to knock down my door because he heard I was dead inside the apartment. We got in the house, and there was 100 calls on the machine. Here I was at a memorial service for a friend, and everyone's saying, I'm dead. It's nuts. The craziest story we heard was that Hump was at my house with two guys. There was a drug deal that went bad, and I had a gunfight. I was shooting everyone. I was killed, and Hump was kidnapped. What the hell could you get for a ransom for Humperdinck? Who has a sweat socks? Then we heard Nancy was locked up for conspiracy. It was mad. At least I know I got a lot of friends. Apparently, the rumor started on the CompuServe computer service, which has a Wrestling Insider information program. The mix-up probably resulted with confusion of a Buzz Sawyer's death and some idiot not knowing the facts. The story is funny in a way now, but when you hear about the death of a friend, it's scary. Nancy summed it up when she said, "Remember one thing, John, you can't kill the devil." Crazy stuff.
Remember something like that happened back sometime. It was in the maybe the 90s. It was something back in the 90s about Perry Saturn was killed. And I heard all kinds of things, whether he jumped out a window, died of a drug overdose or something like that. And things just cascade, sometimes with all that.
The rumor mill, I'm sure. But that was and it was kind of ironic because I didn't even remember it. And then this morning, after the news had broke that Kevin had passed, I went on Slam Wrestling, Greg Oliver's great website, slamwrestling.net. And the headline story was Kevin passing. And there were some pictures that I took of Kevin on there. And Kevin wrote about this and transcribed it directly from the newsletter and put it in Kevin's in the article about Kevin passing. So when I read that, I was like, I don't even remember that. And then I was like searching for a tape. I couldn't find it. So I pulled out my old newsletter and there was the story. And I decided to read it here today, to kind of bring light to something that crazy rumor mill years ago.
Just so goofy.
It is.
That just steamrolled and became, and it's so funny too. I'm calling from beyond.
Yeah. And all the different reasons that were in that, there were so many different rumors, some being shot to all the other, it was like overdoses. I mean, just crazy. And that was when there was no internet really. Mm-hmm.
That was just gossip. But I have to tell you, Marsh, it was always exciting when I was around John's house and the voicemails, and particularly around convention time, anybody in the business had a message on John's voicemail. It was exciting to listen. You have 50 messages, and then there's Moolah, and I love you, and there's Billy Graham. There's
Johnny Valiant. It was like, come on, I gotta get booked. so many. Everyone was reaching out at that time, and it was some crazy stuff. But Marsh, what do we got next?
Let's play, because we've been talking about the IWS and him coming on. I have a little clip from when he was on, and I kind of asked him straight out just to kind of show that like how available he was. About if you had any hesitancy to go on a tour with you being a new promoter and all.
We bring Kevin on.
Let's do it.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Kevin.
Great to see you guys.
Great to see you. I have to say, first and foremost, that I have been pleasantly surprised that Kevin Sullivan is now on social media.
Yeah. I mean, I live on an island. I couldn't be anywhere isolated. I thought I'd come in to the world again.
What memories stand out before we get to some of the clips of some of the of that time period when we went over there, Kevin?
It was just, they say the grandeur of Asia. I mean, the food, the sights. You really acclimated well to it, John. I mean, he had everybody hanging on his arm. I mean, we went to Cebu, right?
Yes, the island. They put us on an island, remember?
Yeah, Cebu City. Yeah, very famous island in the Philippines. We had those huts right on the water. It was wonderful. I mean,
it was.
The grandeur of Asia was terrific.
Yeah, I have a lot of footage of that, of the entire island. I don't have the footage. I've kind of edited the footage out of me getting oiled by some of the locals.
Yeah, I actually had a wonderful couple of days there because I went diving
Yes.
Really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone was kind of, it's always good, Marsh.
Was there any hesitation when you got the call from John about doing this tour? Because you had never been out there, right?
Oh, did you say I'd never been?
No, I'm asking, had you ever been out that way?
Oh, yeah, I've been there quite a bit. Yeah.
Okay.
So I love that part of the world, yeah.
Yeah. So you jumped right on it, no hesitation? Yeah.
No hesitation. And, you know, it's my friend John, so I knew everything was going to be great.
Yeah, what could go wrong? Johnny's bringing me out.
Hey, that was a great tour. I mean, the promoters put us on this little private island, and it was filled with food, and there were girls, you know, there was scuba diving, there was jet skiing, and the whole tour, you know, everyone that was on the tour. We had a loaded, we had Diamond Dallas Page and Bob Orton and Conan and the Mexican Minis and the Power Twins and Sunny Beach and Kevin and Wendy Richter, Medusa, Greg Valentine. It was loaded. It was a loaded tour, and everyone, and that was the thing. It was a good tour. Everybody got along. Paul E was even there. Paul Heyman, he came for the first week, and that's where he put Public Enemy together. Ted Petty and Mike Dorham, Johnny Rotten, Rocco Rock, and you know, it's like so he saw them there, and he got to meet Conan for the first time there, and so that was that was a good feeling, and everyone treated us like gold there. And, you know, there were some shenanigans that went on, as you would. I think Johnny Rotten got actually crashed a party of Imelda Marcos in the hotel. We were at the Manila Hotel. But everyone, especially going there, coming back, the plane trips, everyone had a wonderful time. Everyone had a wonderful time. Even Warlord and Barbarian. You know, even Warlord, he was a little cranky if he didn't get to eat on time. But he was the only one I was kind of scared of. Because he was like, where are we going to eat? When do I get to work out?
Was that the only time that Paul would have managed Warlord and Barbarian?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, we cut promos, and they were the IWAS Tag Team Champions. And Paul was there managing them. And he also managed DDP. He also managed Bob Orton. You know, he was doing quadruple duty. But after the first 7 days of a 2.5 week tour, he says, I'm going home. I was like, what do you mean? I'm going home.
I got the numbers I need.
I got everything I need. I'm leaving. And he left, and he was gone. That was the end of it. And he didn't even travel with the group going over there. He came by himself.
A quick question about Kevin while you're out there, because you were mentioning, you know, some of the difficulties with some of the talent. And I mean, some of them we got in the archives. There's plenty of stories about the being held up for some money in a few of these. Did Kevin ask for anything extra while he was out there?
Like a bigger payday to help with the booking and stuff? Or
maybe. Did he ask for anything special or anything extra?
I negotiated a pretty good rate for Kevin. And for Nancy, and he came along. You know, that tour was it was a $250,000 tour. I mean, that's what we were paid to go over there. It was $250,000, and that was in 1993. So that's pretty good money.
Yeah.
The ones I had the problems with were Ultimate Warrior, who was supposed to be on the tour, and then I agreed to pay him $25,000, and then he wanted 50, and I had to agree to pay 50. And then my advertising started. He hadn't signed his contract. And then it was like 3-4 weeks before the tour, I'm in my lawyer's office, Ron Scholar, who eventually we worked together to bring AAA to the United States. And Warrior is on the phone with Ron and I, and Jake Roberts and DDP are in the waiting room waiting to come in to get their contract signed and get their deposits. And Warrior's like, John, I can't go unless you give me $100,000. So I was like, I can't do that. And then voices raised, and I finally said, I ain't going unless I get $100,000. I said, well, you agreed to $25,000. Then I agreed to bump it up to $50,000. I can't and I won't pay you $100,000. Well, I'm not going to go. I said, well, go fuck yourself. And I hung up on him. 2 seconds later, Jake comes in because I agreed to pay Jake. I think it was like $15,000, $20,000, something like that. You were going to pay that son of a bitch $50,000, and then he held me up for more money. So,
yeah. But
no one else asked for anything more. It was just Jake holding me up. Even when we were there, did a couple of double shots. Jake, and I think Kevin tried to talk to him too, but Jake was Jake.
Now, John, did he not have, before you went on the tour, before you left with Kennedy or whatever, didn't Jake have a problem with his snake? Did he have it killed or something?
We had an issue with Jake, a couple issues at JFK Airport. We had our own private representative from Singapore Airlines with us. And Jake had this white albino snake, and he didn't check it like you're supposed to check animals or whatever. He kept it in his bag. But when we were in the waiting area where they had a separate area for all the boys and all of us before we would get on the plane and go through customs, Jake took the snake out of the bag and started chasing around our Singapore Airlines rep. Of course, she reported it, and then the snake was confiscated.
They didn't like that? That's weird.
No. So we had to go find Jake a snake when we went overseas, and that was not an easy thing to do. But he was the only one. He disappeared to go to Jamaica, you know, because JFK Airport is right by Jamaica, and Jamaica is a really tough area. He left, and he disappeared for like an hour or so he can go buy some crack. And then we're on the plane in business class, and he takes this little bag of crack, and he's dipping a cigarette in it, and he's lighting it up because you could smoke on the plane. And he's smoking. And I was like, "What are you doing?" He goes, "It's crack, brother. You want some?" I was like, "No." And then the flight attendant from Singapore Air was passing through, and she looked at him. He had this little thing, and what is that? It's candy. Do you want some? The endless Jake stories. But anyway, this is about Kevin and not about Jake, even though Jake is good today and he's back with his wife and all that. So God bless him.
It's just one of those interesting things, too, because we always know, I mean, especially with your friendship with Kevin, that he always did so much for you. And so I just thought it was notable that going on that trip and you asking him for help and even that Dallas thing, he never was like, "I'll do it if," or "I'll do it, but." It was never that. It was, "I'll do it because it's John."
Yeah, and he'll and he would offer the advice. Like when we thought that show in Dallas, Don, was going to be – that was the end of it. Kevin took control.
Yeah.
He sat with Dee, I think her name was, order. Mm-hmm. We went into, you know, into the stands. We didn't even go in the office. We were sitting in the venue, and he just explained to her the bad press, the fact that, you know, the guys won't be able to get paid. This will be bad for your reputation. You know, you roll the dice when you do a show. And he convinced her that, and she left and came back with the rest of the second half of the money, and we were able to get everybody paid in full, and everybody went on happy, even though, you know, she lost money, which was certainly unfortunate. And I took a lot of heat on that because it was a dead market, because they were giving away free tickets at the Sportatorium every Friday, and here I am trying to sell this all-star card with big names on it, but the market was dead.
Yeah.
Do you have a clip of the airplane ride or something with Kevin?
Yeah.
From coming
home? I got Kevin. One of the cool things that he had mentioned when he was on was just how close he was to the Tanaka family.
Yes.
And it was evident in this. I shortened it to just their segment because you have a few minutes long clip, and I believe it's on your YouTube somewhere.
Yeah. So everything's on everything that we're pulling. Also, all the video is on our Pro Wrestling Spotlight YouTube channel.
Yeah. It's all there. And this was just that segment because you go and show everybody doing everything. And one of my favorite moments on there was that you get a zoom in of Medusa's new engagement ring that they had gotten. Her and Greg had just gotten engaged.
Valentine on that tour.
Yeah. I thought that was so cool.
They bought new Rolexes too.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. When you filmed that, or when I came across that, I remember sending that to her and being like, "Did you see this? Do you remember this?" And she's like, "Oh my God, that's so great." But This is Kevin and Pat Tanaka just hanging out in the back of the plane, having drinks together, just goofing.
Yeah.
Hey, the two gamblers. I'm having Patrick. Oh, thanks.
Hey. We're killing in Manila from
the killer in Manila.
Trip is over. Thank you very much for everything.
Thank you, John.
That's good. John.
John's in.
We're
we're just getting you back here to get smashed for a little while.
And we came on the flight in a good mood. We're coming back in a good mood, which is unusual.
Well, that's good, brother. I'm glad to hear it. It looked like you're too happy back here.
I was wanted to. I needed to unwind.
Yes.
That's cool, boy. That's great.
Yeah, they were all happy. Everyone had a good time. And Tanaka was right. Me and Pat would hit the casinos and play blackjack, you know. And we were, you know, we did quite well over there, actually, at the time. But everyone was fun. Everyone was happy. You can see that. Everyone was happy. And normally in wrestling, especially if you're doing something overseas or you go, it's a lot of people are just bitching, moaning, griping. But everyone came home happy. And Kevin and Nancy had such a wonderful time there. Wonderful.
Yeah, it's really cool, man. I love it too. When he was on episode 84, no matter how much I tried to like dig out of him about stories from Singapore, he just kept going back to the food. So good. It's just, oh, the food was top notch. And he was blown away by the food more than anything, is what I gathered.
And you know what I particularly liked in that last clip was Nancy on the far right just waving and being happy and thoroughly being happy, smiling. And, you know, here we are mourning the loss of our friend Kevin, and, you know, she's gone. And it's just another part of your life that, you know, as you get older, you start losing people. It's tough.
Yeah. And in different ways, of course, Kevin, and unexpected with him. And Nancy, of course, what happened with her. And that was probably... These two, I mean, out of all the deaths, you know, and losing Bruno a few years ago and people I was close to, Billy Graham passing, and but Kevin and Nancy were special to me. I mean, I just loved them like family. And when she passed and the way she passed, I couldn't get over that for a long, long time. And even, you know, knowing now that Kevin's not with us anymore, that's not easy. It's not easy.
I sucked. As soon as I heard he was even sick, I was like, no. But yeah, no, like you said, Donnie, just how happy they were. I also took note of the fact that, yeah, it's funny that you mentioned she was on the far right. And I was all like, it's funny to me that Kevin wasn't in the middle. He was on the window. Right. Pat was in the middle and then she was on the end. And I was like, it's just kind of funny because it, to me, solidified even more just how tight he was with Pat.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's and Pat was over. Pat was over. We billed him from Manila.
Yeah.
And we put the strap on him. He beat Bob Orton.
He beat him bloody, right?
Oh, yeah. And then Orton, you know, busted him open with a shot to the head with the belt. And, yeah, we had some bloody matches over there, you know. And the people were like, they were shocked. It was almost like, it wasn't like a traditional American audience because they were quiet. They would cheer and they would get shocked at some of these things.
Do you remember where you did the IWAS show that had Conan versus Sabu?
That was stateside, right? Don, you were there. It was in Caracas, Venezuela.
Caracas, yes, we were there. Yes.
Yeah, it was Rey Mysterio teaming up with Conan against Sabu and Psychosis.
Psychosis, that's it. Yes.
And Don, you did double duty. You were not only a referee, you also came out with, I believe, Nikolai Volkov is the bug, the manager.
Yeah, known locally as La Cucaracha. I got to tell you something. We got to laugh, but you know, anybody knew Nikolai, he's one of the few guys that nobody ever said a bad word about. Nikolai was very tight with the Buck. And I can remember when we roomed together and when Nikolai got there, because remember several of the wrestlers had trouble getting out of Beirut, Lebanon, yeah. Which is amazing. These guys would go for a show over there. And he strung a clothesline across our hotel room and washed his clothes in the bathtub and had clothespins that was hanging the clothes along the clothesline in our hotel room. It was just so classic.
That was a crazy few days from the Savoldis booking like some of the same talent I had who didn't show up on mine. Beefcake and Jim Neidhart were two of them. We had Matt Bourne there on that tour. And the craziest thing was Hercules Hernandez, if you remember.
Yes.
We left him there.
We
left him in Caracas because he
missed his flight. Yeah. Because
two guys, the Sumo Death Team, I guess there were two guys. I don't even know where they came from. I don't even know how I booked them and who referred them. But there was this tag team, and one of the guys separated his shoulder.
Yes.
In the opening matches. And then the doctor, they prescribed a Percocet or whatever, some painkillers for him. And then he went to get the prescription filled. And then the pharmacist gives the prescription back.
Yes, yes.
And he shows up at the hotel, look what I got. And then all of a sudden, all the boys started taking the prescription, running to the pharmacy, filling it, and then handing it back to somebody else to get a prescription.
Wonderful time. But with Hercules, he was so gone that he was passed out in the lobby. And I think maybe you took back he had his ledger or something with all his personal information and was just laying there.
Yeah, but we couldn't get him up. And I was like, we're going to leave you. And he didn't care. And he found his way back. And he got his ledger back eventually. So but that's crazy stuff.
Anyway.
Tony, you were on the show a number of times, obviously constantly on the show, but there was a few times I was pulling up these clips of, or just digging through clips, Kevin Sullivan. You interviewed him quite a lot backstage. Was he kind of one of your go-to guys that you knew you could get something out of?
Does that for John?
No, it was you. You interviewed him backstage, Donnie.
I know who it was for. Yeah, because, you know, again, not everybody would talk to people because there was still some case of kayfabe or some people weren't trusted. Well, but when you're around for a while, there becomes a sense of trust. And again, like with me and Kevin, we always talked baseball first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it shows that you have other interests than just, you know, give me some information. He wasn't easy for me. He was easy to go to, and all the stories I was doing in the magazines, I always do quite a bit on him. It was always positive. I would never do anything to intentionally rip on somebody or whatever. I think they all appreciated, Kevin included, that A, I did something on them, and B, it was always putting them over.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm asking some of these questions because I just can't put over enough how much I've heard and come to understand of just what a good dude he was and how genuine he was overall. As much as people want to talk about how much of a genius he is, which is 100% true, I've also never heard anybody say they had a hard time working with him or that he was difficult in any way.
Yeah, me either.
You know, which is amazing because like you said, even that, He wasn't superstar Billy Graham size in eras where a lot of them were, you know what I mean? Like, but he still maintained a toughness and a fierceness about him where he fit right in and a brilliance about him where no one questioned if he thought we should do something in this match, you know? Well, if Kevin says it, then boom.
He knew how to be relevant. He always made sure that he kept himself relevant.
Yeah. I want to play this one last audio clip. Again, when you had something going on, he was one of your first calls. And you mentioned about the IWS show, too, that he was one of your first calls because you just knew, well, I'll get Kevin, and that's a good start, right? This was your 100th show, and you wanted to have a big powwow about it. You wanted to have as many cool people on as you could. And, of course, you call Kevin Sullivan and Nancy.
And now we're going to be joined direct from, I guess, his lair down in the southern part of the country on the beach, Kevin Sullivan. And Kevin is, of course, one of the mainstays of World Championship Wrestling. Kevin, are you with us?
Yes, I am, John. First of all, congratulations on your 100th show. I listened to it myself as much as possible. You had a great show today.
Well, I appreciate it very much. And, of course, what I'm trying to do today is bring on the guests, which... we pretty much cover hard news stories here each and every week with the guests that my favorite guest over the last couple of years, and of course you're one of them, Kevin. I've known you for a very, very long time. Matter of fact, when I was shooting photographs down at the Boston Garden in the mid-70s we first acquainted ourselves and watched your career, and it's been an illustrious one, to say the least. And now you're back in the forefront of WCW. You have a new protege, I guess. Are you getting some managing and also back in wrestling?
Yes, I am, John. As you might have saw last night on the World Championship Wrestling TBS, the one-man gang has awoken again. The one-man gang is now walking the earth again with me, and the one-man gang will be somebody to reckon with in the WCW in the next coming months.
Well, there's a lot of things heating up in WCW, and just getting you back there. You've always been plotting against some of the fan favorites in WCW, and now with one-man gang. Now, is this a situation where you're managing him specifically, or is it other parties involved?
Right now, Teddy Long is handling both of us. Teddy Long came to me with a problem, John, and the problem was Ron Simmons. But if you have a solution like the one-man gang, it doesn't seem to be a problem. But I'd like to say something right now, John. I think that the people that listen to your show need to know the great work you're doing, and I'd like to support you, and I'd like to tell these people to come out and support your Spotlight show, John, because what you've done over the last few years and this 100th anniversary show, it certainly is a mild mark in wrestling radio.
Well, we certainly enjoy doing the program each and every week and putting on the fans' conventions that we do and the bus trips, the luncheons, the video parties. And it's just costly to be here on the air each and every week, and we hope that the fans listen to us and hopefully support us by joining our Booster Club and getting plugs you just gave me and Terry Funk and Jim Cornette. We really appreciate that, and we appreciate your support by participating in a program like this. We have big news up here in the Northeast, Kevin. As you know, the World Championship Wrestling crew will be coming up to the Meadowlands, and that'll take place on Thursday night, April the 4th. And will you be participating in this extravaganza?
Yes, I will, John. I wouldn't miss it coming up to the Northeast again. You know, I'm originally from there, and coming to the Meadowlands is really a coup for the WCW. And, John, I'm going to tell you what, to me, the matches are the best matches they've ever put together. Just to think about Sting and Flair in a cage, never mind the Giant, putting the Giant in there with a cage against Sting, with Sting, I think it will tip the balance of the scales for Flair once and for all.
Yes, indeed. Of course, Nature Boy Ric Flair, a seven-time champion of the world. And I heard a rumor, I don't know if you could substantiate this or if you know anything about it. Is it true that the World Championship Wrestling is planning a Clash of the Champions to be broadcast from the Meadowlands? Do you know anything about that?
I heard, John, that has been a rumor I've heard before, that there may be a clash coming from the Meadowlands. And I wouldn't doubt it. There's a lot of things happening in WCW.
Well, we're all happy that the organization is branching up here to the Northeast. And if there is a clash taking place from the Meadowlands, I am sure that the fans will definitely come out to support that. And it will be one heck of a show.
It certainly will be, John. I mean, I'm looking forward. I like to, like you've done a lot of support for the WCW. And I like to see the people support you, especially on these bus trips you have and your show. I mean, I think your show is a worthy thing. It promotes wrestling, and I like to reach out to all the people and say, support John Arizzi at this time.
No matter how much you tried to go kayfabe, he kept going, I'm here for you today, pal.
And it was so funny because Mick Foley showed up, Cactus Jack shows up and towards the end, and then Cactus and Mick were talking on the air, and yeah, that was a special day, the 100th show. And Don, I think you did almost every single one of them, but me too.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned the Clash of Champions. I was at the one at the New York Knockouts, the one they had up in Albany area. That was a tremendous show.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, that was a lot of special memories, man. And I just can't believe he's gone. But I think that's about it for the clips too, right, Marsh?
I think that's what we have, unless there's something you want me to dig up real quick. We have another clip that I'd like to hold off on because I think it would be really nice to get Anderson on. And Anderson, like you had mentioned before, was really tight with him. And actually, he won an award at CAC, and Kevin's the one who inducted him. And so I found that little speech, and I'd like to see that with him.
That would be good, you know. And it's kind of funny because at that, I didn't remember Andrew from years ago. I had no clue. And then when he saw me, he came up to me and just started hugging me and thanking me. He goes, "You don't know what you did. You changed my life." I was like, "What do you mean? I don't even remember the guy. I didn't.
Yeah. Oops.
Because he met Kevin at my convention. That's where they first met.
How old was he? Would he have been at one of your conventions? Young. Yeah.
He was young. He was young. And Kevin, and they hit it off. And every convention that Kevin was at, Andrew was there with him. I mean, over all these years and traveling together. And so we will bring Andrew on because I'm sure he's got some amazing memories of Kevin. And we'll share more stuff on Pro Wrestling Spotlight Rewind on the podcast and on YouTube. But I had to do this today. I mean, I didn't want to wait. I didn't want to wait to tape a show and then release the show as we do each and every week, the Pro Wrestling Spotlight Rewind. And Don, listening back to these first shows that we're going through now, you were actually, we brought you on initially as almost like an indie wrestling reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a week until I think we got into the second month of the run of the show. Then you became the guy with the news capsule.
Well, yeah, because I'm sure I badgered you for that. But what happened was I've told this story before. When the NWA had their big show in Boston in '89, it could have been June or July of '89. You went to that show, and that's when I hadn't seen you in a while. And you were talking about your radio show, and I was going, "Boy, I'd like to get on there. Boy, I'd like to get on there." And you said, "Hey, you want to come on the show?" And you know, it was a great, great show. And then we, after the show, we piled into the cab with Paulie and Eddie and Missy, and went to Chinatown, and that started everything of me coming on the show. And like you said, just doing a capsule. And I stayed on for as long as you had the show, and then we had some really good times. But like with Kevin, where he, to me, when he passed, to me, it's just another part of the pro wrestling era that for me is romantic. It just represents just a wonderful time. Well, when I came on your show, you know, we go back to, you know, when going over your grandmother's house and going over your house and your grandmother and the cats and your neighbors giving his wife pile drivers. John Mazuka.
John Mazuka and his wife used to give her pile drivers.
Pile drivers. It's crazy. And then of course so we had all that. So it just, then when you came back into the scene in Boston that day, it just like, this is great. And, you know, it's been there ever since, but just a romantic era of wrestling when it was territorial and you had Jack Witchie's arena and all those kind of places. Or like I was telling you, I was going to the armories where it was very close up, you know? So that's what I think of Kevin. He represents, you know, I guess what some people, if you do a baseball analogy, it would be like people that grew up with the Dodgers and the Giants and the Yankees in New York. You know, it was a special time. Well, for me, I remember those pictures you took of Kevin in a hallway at Madison Square Garden posing with, you know, his red, white, and blue trunks on. That's how I always remember him, as a young, thick, tough-looking guy who gave you a good match.
Yeah, and he was stiff. He worked stiff. He was something else, man. To this day, and I can't believe he.
You know, John, back in the early 70s, there was a wrestler who was on shows, mainly in New England, a preliminary guy by the name of Gene Dundee, who was really, his dad was the one who had the wrestling school at the Boston Arena. So that was one of Kevin's trainers. So whenever I would see him, on whether it's at Witchie's or even at Boston Gardens or whatever, those shows in the Boston area, that's who was one of Kevin's trainers, Boston Arena.
Wow. Well, I really appreciate everyone joining us here today.
Oh,
I
mean, wonderful
comments here from everyone. And Marsh, you put this together pretty damn quick.
Thank you, Marsh.
It's really amazing. And you know, for everybody out there, I mean, we do the Pro Wrestling Spotlight Rewind every week. We started again, Don. We started from the beginning again with the Soundville Media that's distributing our show. And so this is the last, as I said, it's the last time we're doing it. So we're in 1989 now. The show runs to 1995. So we're 35 years into it. So if you want to check us out on any of the podcast platforms, just look for Pro Wrestling Spotlight Rewind or Pro Wrestling Spotlight, the YouTube channel. There's so much content up there. A lot of content of Kevin, matches of Kevin, from Singapore and the Philippines. So that's youtube.com/Pro Wrestling Spotlight. Lots of content. Subscribe to it if you can. And we're going to be talking more about Kevin in the weeks to come, and we'll try to get Andrew on after everything settles down a little bit, and we'll try to get a few more people on and give us some more memories, play some more clips of Kevin, and maybe we'll do this live thing again too, under better circumstances, but maybe to follow up with a little bit more Kevin stuff. But Marsh, I want to thank you, Don, my friend, my dear friend of 50 years. You mean so much to me in my life, and you've always been there, right? Mm-hmm. And everything, conventions, everything, tours.
And your mother liked me.
My mom did like you. Rest in peace, Mom. But she loved Donnie, and my sister did.
How amazing was it? The one time your mom called in and you were on remote and Donnie's with you on the phone. Your mom calls in to check on you during the show, and you're like, "Is this my mom?"
I was calling in. I think it was, where the hell was I? Was I in Singapore or in L.A.? I was somewhere doing a live remote, and it's like, "Let's take a call, John. It's Mommy." I was like, yeah. "What?"
You're like, "That's my mom." And then Don grabs on the phone. Hey, Snooki. Okay. So good. But yeah, thank you for being willing to come on immediately and doing this. And I messaged you this morning when you messaged me, and I said, hey, if you want to wait a couple days and we'll just tell patrons everything's going to be late, like, take your time. And you went, I'm feeling it now. Let's go now. And so let's do it.
Yeah, and let's do it live. So that's what we do. Let's do it live. And it's good to be able to immediately share this with all the platforms. I think it's on Instagram, YouTube. It's Facebook on the Matt Memories public page there. Mm-hmm. So I think 3 or 4 different platforms are airing this live right now. And it's amazing, what technology can do these days. And we've had a really good amount of people joining us to remember Kevin and to hear our stories and listen to these little clips and the videos. And because everybody here who's commenting and everybody here who's watching, we all love Kevin Sullivan. We all love the past master. We loved him and everything he stood for in the wrestling business. Authenticity, believability, suspension of disbelief was Kevin's. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he was a fucking great guy. All right, we're going to wrap it up. I got a Zoom call in 7 minutes. thank everybody once again for joining us today, and to remember Kevin Sullivan. And we'll be speaking to you real soon. Until next time, when we talk more history with you, this is John Arezzi for Pro Wrestling Spotlight. Rewind. Rest in peace, my friend, Kevin Sullivan.
Well, fans, that's all the time we have this week. I'm John Arezzi. See you next time, everybody.